Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsession
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hello and welcome to the Dork Forest. I'm Jackie Cation. I'm your host of the Dork Forest. Jackie Cation. You know the websites, JackieCation.com, DorkForest.com, TheDorkForest.com. FamilyPetAncestry.com was purchased by me because it made me laugh. I laughed, you guys. And it just points to JackieCation.com. Everything is available on JackieCation.com or DorkForest.com. The Dork Forest is a podcast, and it is available on iTunes, AllThingsComedy.com, and probably repurposed by any number of other vehicles to put on a device of your choosing. Let's do the credits. The credits. Patrick Brady's going to fix this audio. Mike Rickberg composed and sang the song you just heard, sang with his wife Sarah. Mike will sing again his words to the Mexican hat dance at the end of the program. Vilmos fixes the website, JackieCation.com. Jackie, there, if you like the show, there are many ways to support the show, not the least of which, and not unappreciated, word of mouth. Let the people know. You can tag me on Twitter at JackieCation. And or Facebook. There's a Ranger page on Facebook if you want to join and talk to other Rangers of the Dork Forest. And you could talk up the show. That'd be a great way to support the show. Very basic way to support the show is there's a PayPal donation button. Knock yourselves out. You may donate hard cash. I have one person who donates via Venmo because she doesn't like PayPal. But I appreciate whatever's happening. You can use the Amazon banner. The Amazon banner is also just it's available on dorkforest.com or jackiecation.com. It's a little link to Amazon, essentially. It's a portal to Amazon. You order like normal. It doesn't cost you extra. The Dork Forest gets a bit of a kickback. That is a way to support the show that doesn't cost you anything if you order from Amazon. Another way to do it would be to get merch. If you want a Ranger of the Dork Forest t-shirt or just the logo Dork Forest t-shirt, my stand-up shirt, the Spooky Reading Girl shirt, those are all available on the store page on JackieCation.com, along with my albums and DVD. You can get all of my albums and DVD as downloadable. iTunes, Amazon, the special, the Horcrux special, this will make an excellent Horcrux special, is available on ComedyFilmNerds.com on their downloadable page. And you can, or you can get a hard copy of the DVD from JackieCation.com. I have a new album, speaking of which, just came out March 3rd, 2017, I did good, you guys. I was on the top of the list on Amazon and iTunes, and I never have been, so I'm going to toot my own horn. It is called I Am Not the Hero of This Story. It is available for download from Amazon, from iTunes, and it will be available from as a hard copy by the end of the month. I'm getting them printed up, and you'll be able to order them in the store from JackieCation.com. If you are in another country besides the United States, well, first of all, congratulations. Second of all, and iTunes or Amazon isn't working for you, email me, Jackie@JackieCation.com, and I have a way that you can just buy a $10 download card. And I just send you a picture of it, you download it, and then you PayPal me $10, and our lives are complete. These episodes are all from the Joko cruise. I went on a cruise with 1,780 nerds. It was a Dork Forest bonanza, and I recorded 6 episodes, so I'm using the intro for this, for all of them. The Joko Cruise is based on a guy named Jonathan Colton, who is a musician and very talented and wonderful, and if you get a chance, it's called the Joko Nerd Cruise, and it was great, and I recorded a live episode, which didn't cost me anything, so I'm just releasing it normal, and then 5 other episodes. None of these are premium episodes because they didn't cost me anything to make, so I'm just putting them out. There are premium episodes at Bandcamp. The dorkforest.bandcamp.com has probably a dozen premium episodes, which were recorded live in front of an audience. Cost me a couple of bucks to make, so I charge a couple of bucks to buy them. They are $2 each on the dorkforest.bandcamp.com. There is also a storytelling album there that I put, which is $4, and then 17 episodes of The Dork Forest before it was pre-recorded that I picked out, that I did as a 10-year anniversary album. That is free. If you wish to listen to 17 old episodes of The Dork Forest, my favorite 17, I think, from those first 215 episodes. Anyway, The only other thing at JackieCation.com that you might like to see is my calendar. When I'm doing stand-up, where I'm doing stand-up, it is at JackieCation.com. It is updated all the time. You can also follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, all the things. Anyway, longest intro ever. Let's get into it because it's awesome. Hey, I'm still in this boat, you guys. I'm on this ship, the Joko Cruise, and we are in the ocean. It is exciting times for me because I've heard so much about it. And yet, have I watched it? Not yet, but it's happening. Steven Universe, I'm going to watch it. And the creator.
Fine. I personally forgive you.
Oh, look at that. Rebecca Sugar, you guys, at Rebecca Sugar, spelled like Rebecca Sugar on Twitter. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Of course. Yes. I've been watching you play and sing and then talk when you're allowed because you're surrounded by rampant extroverts on various panels.
Somehow here it's,
even on the Joko Cruise. It's weird. It turns out social anxiety can manifest in both ways. Super chatty.
I hadn't thought of it that way.
Super silent. Yeah.
Whoa.
Because I'm the other one.
Yeah.
Yeah. My Asperger's hump is always acting up and it makes me loud.
You're the first friend that I made.
Oh, there you go.
We met right off the bus.
We really did. We met right off the bus. We went to dinner. Mm-hmm. We had barbecue.
Yes, it was quite good.
It was quite good. It was you and your brother and my fella and me. And it was good. All right. You want to dork out about musicals.
Yeah.
I have some information and there's been one episode, but people are like, it wasn't enough. Which is perfect because it doesn't even matter what it is. It could be more of the same. But
that you had a dork for us about musicals before.
Yeah, but it wasn't.
Who else is?
Leanne Olson.
Ah, I see. Uh-huh.
Oh, God, I hope I got that right. Anyway, she's wonderful, whoever it was. And I believe it was Leanne Olson. So, Minneapolis. Let's talk musicals before I dig a hole.
Oh, my gosh.
Because of my Civ memory. What are your early musical loves?
Music Man was the one that I watched. Oh, Music Man and Fiddler on the Roof. I watched over and over and over again.
I love the Music Man. I genuinely do. Because you know why? There's always a band, kid. There's always a band. The Music Man. I love the Music Man. What do you love about the Music Man?
Gosh. I love its like sort of stickiness.
Yeah.
Like about it. I love the way that the songs like just progress everything, but are sort of self-contained. And each one is, and then when they layer on top of each other, I mean, just like this is basic musical stuff, but yeah. That was like the one that I had seen a lot of and all the sort of
from
Americana
a musical
stuff. Yeah.
From a musical perspective, they layer on top of each other.
Yeah. Yeah. When it's like, Light of Rose and Dream of Lovers are layering on top and the Buffalo Bills doing their,
the barbershop
stuff.
Quartet
yeah,
thing?
Yeah. It's okay. Just, I like that stuff. I don't know. I didn't understand it. When I was young, I didn't understand it at all. So when I went back, I thought I did.
Right.
And then I watched it again as an adult. And
you saw the scam part of it?
That part, I sort of understood that.
Okay.
I didn't understand. There's that whole song in the beginning where they're in Iowa and everyone is mean.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand they were mean. I was like, oh, it's so fun.
They're just distant, distantly aloof.
Yeah.
The people of Iowa.
They were singing a fun song and they were dancing around. So I was like, wow, what a great time everybody's having here. Like, I didn't see the irony of like,
they're emotionally
we're
inaccessible.
We don't want you here. Yeah.
Yes.
Totally
we don't need, whatever. Uh-huh. You just do whatever you need to do.
And that setting up the challenge he will face, which now as a writer, I'm like, okay, I understand the point of all these numbers.
Is
he's going to have to overcome. And,
oh, right. I don't think I ever got that.
Yeah.
I always just figured he was just a cold call. And and so he goes in.
No, it's like this one's going to be especially hard. And then I think I didn't understand that Marion had loved that man.
What did she love?
That she like.
Did she have a previous?
Yes, she had another lover, which is she has this tie to the library because of this man who was.
Oh, the old guy who left her the library?
Yeah. And that's why people talk and something's going on. And
there's
like a scandal of her having some involvement
with this man.
Yeah.
But all
and
she
what
was,
it,
was
and what is it
and what it meant and all this stuff.
They're very vague about it because it's supposed to be like,
it is super, but I never, you know what? I never thought it was like a crush kind of situation or a
Well, and she's been interested in many people because she sings about it. She says,
"Oh, I love that with the trolley guy."
Uh huh.
It's one of the greatest songs.
Yeah. Right. She loves being in love with someone.
Right. She does love being in love with somebody. Yeah. But I forgot about the old guy who left her the library. Mm-hmm. That was the scandal that made her, what, unmarriageable?
Well, and that's when it's like Pick a Little, Talk a Little, is that's them gossiping about that guy.
Oh.
Where it's like, oh, there's what?
That's right. Wow. I own The Music Man and have seen it no less than a dozen times. Only as an adult, by the way. And I am more sucked into like the sort of the sales angle.
Uh-huh.
Because my dad is, you know, he's a sales guy.
He's a salesman?
Yeah. So I'm always like... I love the sales part of it. And he's just like, the think system is my favorite part.
Uh-huh.
Because if you think the minuet in D,
right.
Is that what it is? You can play the minuet in D.
Yeah.
And then he just has them sing along and hands them.
I mean, all that stuff is so interesting. I think I love her arc, Marion's arc.
Okay.
Because she, I guess I like it as a, sort of as a schlocky cartoonist who's making a thing that is essentially a magic trick that's fooling people into thinking these like, characters are alive. And I think a lot about, you know, stories and advertising and magic and how you're, you know, essentially manipulating people into feeling and doing things.
Yeah. And what are musicals but those?
Oh, yes. It's entertainment. It's entertainment. Yeah. And she is sort of learning and there's a vulnerability that comes with opening yourself up to like a piece of entertainment that I think about a lot. And what she is, she refuses to be vulnerable. She's like, I see that this person's a fraud.
Right.
But then by the end of the musical,
she goes to the show.
She realizes that the spell that he's casting is, this is just going to end up being about the Music Man.
Fair enough.
Thing.
It can, as long as it lasts.
The spell that he's casting on everyone, which she finds so, so awful at the top. And then she falls under it because she sees, you know, being sort of convinced to believe in something. And in this case, sort of like themselves, even though it's sort of a false promise.
Her speech in the gym.
I think it also when she finds him at the end, because the thing is, he knows he's a fraud.
Yeah.
And he thinks there is no value in what he's doing.
Right.
And that he's tricking everyone and she can't be tricked.
Yeah.
But by the end of it, she sees the phoniness, she stops seeing it as phoniness and sees it as something that is...
it is of value.
It's of value because it's a belief and it's
And
a,
he doesn't and it's, believe in himself.
No, he doesn't. And then she believes in him and that's why he's so moved at the end because he's just like, you know, you were right. And she ends up having this sort of power that nobody else in the story has because she can see through him when she chooses to believe in him and what he's doing when even he doesn't. She's the only one who can give that to him.
Yes. Yeah, because all he thinks about is the money. Mm-hmm. But when she rips that page out of the book and hands it to the mayor, mm-hmm. and I mean, there's all like that speech she does at the end in the gym or whatever, where she goes, just think about like the four guys who only hang out with each other now that they realize they're a quartet.
Mm-hmm.
And the town coming together because of the band.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Well, in a way, I mean, I think maybe it's very, it relates a bit to sort of what you do your podcast about because it's, you know, it's about how this sort of illusion, this sort of schlocky BS that he's selling everyone is becoming something that's tying people together. Like they're, them getting a, sort of into and kind of nerdy about this band and this guy who is a totally, you know, a total phony,
just a charlatan,
their love for him, their adoration of him that is then sort of bouncing off of each other. And then they're, you know, they're finding this thing that they're connecting over. And then what Marion realizes is like, it kind of, maybe it doesn't even really matter what it is, you know, because it's changing the way that you feel.
Right.
And I think that's sort of always something I think about with entertainment is like, you know, does it matter if there's something that isn't real that change, if that changes the way that you feel.
You just made that movie that much better for me because that is so true. I always knew that I liked it, you know, because mm-hmm. I do like that Americana stuff and I like the sales stuff. But the heart of it, I mean, that's what musicals can do that you don't always get, you know, from other kinds of movies, you know, sometimes they're trying too hard And musicals, you expect to try too hard because it's a musical.
Yeah,
like, it's already a construct. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a goof. So you just have to let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating. A little Opie Cunningham. What about the mom?
The mom?
Yeah.
Oh,
Marion's mom. I liked some of my favorite lines. Is when she goes, "You're looking for this combination of, you know, like all these different,
right, all these incredible authors."
Yeah, it's like some sort of the authors and the heroes and the. She's like, "You're looking for that guy." And
that stuff. I don't know if that stuff does not hold up. Some of that stuff does not hold up that well. But I was watching it with my crew and when we were doing work on the musical episode, because some people hadn't seen it yet. That some of that stuff, like right off the bat, where it's like, you know, look at Marion, she's a worthless human being, because just like, oh gosh,
oh, because she's just kind of, it feels like
she's
a doormat,
unmarriable, and,
yes,
yeah, and this, yeah, stuff that, you know, when she's,
you can see stuff in retrospect where you're like, yeah, oh, this doesn't pass the Bechdel test.
Yeah,
it wasn't made to,
it's harsh, but at least it's partly about that and how, you know, but then at the end of the day she's still sort of finding someone and,
right,
yeah, it's turning that horrible problem of
being alone.
Of being alone around.
Yes. Heaven forfend.
That's a shame.
It is a pity, but I think I think that most people are looking for some sort of partnership, even if you aren't, even if it's just transient, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't have a problem. I think I'm famously known for not minding a love story. I love a romantic comedy. I love a shitty novel.
Yeah,
it just
hits a little. Like I don't know.
It's a
little. When I was little, I didn't think about it as much. And now, yeah, some of the spinster stuff, I'm like, ah, jeez.
Right. It's
I don't know. I'd have to, like, if I were to show it to young children, be like, that.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah,
it doesn't. Yeah,
it's, maybe it just hits me as a in a different way now that I'm. Now that I'm an adult.
Well, the last episode that I just recorded here on the cruise was about genealogy.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman I was talking to is adopted, and she was trying to figure out, and her mom, she found her biological mom. Her biological mom said who her biological dad was. She found her biological dad. She made him take a genealogy test. He's not her biological dad. Mm-hmm. And her biological mom was like, "Well, I've only slept with him and my current husband." And we stared at each other in silence. And she's like, "I know. That's unlikely." And because, you know, it's like my stepmom always said that she only slept with my dad. And I was like, well, first of all, that makes me sad if that's true. And because my dad is a piece of work and God love him. But he has not only slept with you. So I want everyone to get some action, I guess, is what I'm saying. And so I think that it's a natural thing to search for that action.
So you're saying even if she did sleep with that librarian guy, good for her.
I was psyched, actually, that to find out that she might have slept with the old goat. Because I always pictured him as an old goat who owned a library.
Yes, yeah, me too. Yeah. I have to, gosh. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Now I need to watch exactly that again. Because my favorite lines were kind of, like, and then Buddy Hackett.
You know what else this is a departure and I'll jump back to musicals, but I just saw E.T. again and I hadn't seen it in a really long time.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I was like, oh, it's his dad.
Who's his dad?
E.T., the thing is about his father. There's this stuff and it's so small where it's like, oh, you know, their father went somewhere else and is with someone else. And there's this, it's like this person with this hyper intense connection that you have what happens when they're just, they're a part of your family and then they're just not anymore.
Oh, right.
And I was just like, oh,
it's about his dad.
It's about his dad.
Oh my God. Hey, my mind just got blown again. And it was E.T. Holy crap. Wow. All right. Well, let me take a moment to just say, I'm talking to Rebecca Sugar at Rebecca Sugar, Steven Universe, which, by the way, is going to have an art book and an RPG called Save the Light. So if you like Steven Universe, you can go out and get this art book or play the RPG, which is going to be out. Yes. And yeah, so there you go. Now we all know those things. Wow. E.T. I tried to watch E.T. again and I didn't think it held up as well, but now I kind of want to watch it. There's some movies that don't, you know, and I always thought The Music Man did. If you were willing to suspend, Grease was hard.
Yeah, some of the.
Yeah, because
that always had an unfortunate, like, you know, how's this going to end? Oh, she'll just become everything that he
right.
wants.
Right. Yeah, exactly. He's going to try to become what she wants, and then he's going to blow it off because she's going to become what he wants, yeah. and it's not going to be a problem.
Everybody wins.
Yeah, except for that I think their lives would be better if he became what she wanted. But then I am a grandmother of no one, but I was born a grandmother of everyone. Hey, Grandma Cation wants you to just, I don't know, go out for the team. Anyway, yeah, and Greece was so filthy. I think I saw it when I was like 9 or 10, and I didn't get how dirty it was, but my stepmother did. And she was like, this is it. This is the TV. This is the movie you want to see a million times. And I'm like, look how funny it is. And she's like, it's funny. And so, yeah. So what about, I never saw Fiddler. I've never seen Fiddler
you've
on
never,
the Roof.
You've never seen Fiddler on the Roof?
No, I've seen parts of it.
Oh gosh.
Which production? Is there more than one movie or is there one definitive movie?
There's He's from the 70s. I don't think there are other. I mean, I've also seen like stage productions of it.
Right.
Yeah. The one, I'm trying to remember the name of the actor that plays Tevye. It was going to be Zero Mostel.
Oh, okay.
But then it wasn't because of some of the political controversial stuff with Zero Mostel.
Oh, wow.
And then he's this Israeli actor. But it's, I've just seen it, you know, I was a Jewish kid. I am a Jewish adult.
And right, with a Jewish kid inside of you that wants to watch Fiddler on the Roof.
That watched Fiddler on the Roof over and over and over again.
So Fiddler on the Roof is about a dad.
Yes.
And yes. What is Fiddler on the Roof about? Oh, if I Were a Rich Man is the only song I know.
What is it really about?
What is it ostensibly about? Isn't it about her getting married? Or
that's in there.
There's a love story.
They're being pushed out of their home. Of Anatevka.
Okay.
And it's like about...
By racism?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah, yeah,
okay.
Semitism.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they're trying to sort of figure out how to keep their community together and exist in the
to leave as
world
a group
that
or
is changing.
Go, okay.
And, yeah, and that's... It's about, you know, it's Tevye and then his daughters, of which he has many.
Okay.
One of them does get married. Each of them is sort of further and... wants to do something that's further and further away from the traditional way of doing things. And then he has to reconcile being a father
of the next generation
who loves them.
Yeah.
And a man who's upholding Jewish tradition, which is why that first song is like tradition.
Oh,
tradition.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And then it sort of tells you what everyone is supposed to do. And then, so his daughter wants to marry not the person that the family wants her to marry. Who is a butcher, but
steady work.
This tailor who she's loved since she was
also
a
steady
child.
Work. Interesting.
He's not perfect.
He's not the butcher.
He's a dork. He's a nerd.
Okay.
He's like sort of a
kind of a goof.
Yeah, kind of a goofy. He's like sort of a model. His name's Taylor.
Yeah, oh, okay. Model I was Taylor. Like, is he a model?
No,
that would add to it.
He's very dorky. He sings the song Wonder of Wonders.
Yeah.
He's like jumping around. He's so excited because he's going to get to marry this woman that he loves.
Oh, okay.
Fiddler. Anyway, so then Tevye is like, well, do I let her pick her own, yeah, who she wants to be with because she loves him and he's weighing.
Because traditionally, he would just boss. He would just boss her into marrying the other guy.
She would have, and he had already sort of made this arrangement, so breaking that is going to look really bad, which is why he ends up lying to his wife that he had this prophetic dream where something horrible would happen if she did end up marrying the. Do you remember that sequence?
No.
Because the butcher had a, the butcher had a wife before who passed away, so his argument is that sort of the ghost of this wife
right.
would curse all of them if she went through with it.
So he sets it up
so she can
marry the tailor.
And then but then the next daughter, I mean, each one, it just gets a little further.
It goes through like the whole family, essentially, like the movie itself.
Yes. Well, okay. It's the first daughter, the oldest daughter, and then the second oldest falls for someone, but I believe he's a communist.
Okay.
So like politically, they aren't lining up.
Right.
But then the next one, he's not a Jew.
Oh, okay.
And
oh, so, the third one,
and that's when
not
he,
Jewish.
That's when he like snaps.
Oh.
And he's just like, no. And he does it sort of like on the one hand, on the other hand.
Right.
You know, and then he's like, there is no other hand. And it's really sad. And I think the thing seeing Fiddler again as an adult that I never understood is that Tevye is not this isn't quite say he's not smart. He's like a simple guy who like wants to be smart and wants to know everything, but he doesn't.
Yeah.
Because when I was little, and there were ways in which, and so understanding this now, I feel like he's not like my dad. But when I was little, Tevi reminded me a lot of my dad, and in the sense that he was just like, oh, he was a dad. He knows, and he's a dad, and he just like knows everything, and also he like, you know, loves everyone, and he will make these compromises. But now the thing I didn't understand when I was little is that he aspires to be this intellectual that he's not.
Yeah,
and he's just like. His rich man dream, a lot of it involves being able to study all the time. The thing that's funny about him as a character, which I never understood, is that he's imparting all this wisdom that's like, there's a bunch that's wrong with
based
it.
He's on
like misquoting things. And he's trying to, but then
is he really? He's like misquoting whatever he's trying to.
Yeah, and they'll be.
He's like, he just,
and everyone, they'll be like these jokes about how it's like, isn't this what you know it says in the Torah? And he'll be like, it's something like that. You know, like that.
Oh, okay. So it was on purpose. So it's actually part of the story.
They point it out.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's sort of his thing. That's like his, and he's such an interesting character.
That's fascinating.
Because above everything, he's like, you know, he's trying to be like wise and profound, but he's also trying to be this loving parent. And that sort of lends itself to his flexibility. Cause he's like, I feel like I should know more. This is what I interpret. It's like, he wants to know more about like the right thing that you're supposed to do. And then it keeps coming down to like what he feels like he has to do for his kids.
Right. Well, that's fascinating. Cause you know, you think it's just cause that's my theory on many, musicals and sort of lightly, people have attitudes about movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I have a theory that there's always a B plot with a very real message, right? Uh-huh. Whether that message is right wing or left wing or social and what it's trying to move forward, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and traditionally, you know, like a Dirty Dancing, it's keep abortion legal, right? Mm-hmm. That's the message.
Yeah.
Footloose, censorship is bad.
Mm-hmm.
Blue Crush is, true happiness is found through corporate sponsorship. I don't know if you remember that, but that was the Wait, message Blue, at the end of it.
Blue Crush,
the surfing
the
movie?
Surfing,
yeah.
I did not see that.
Literally, that was the message.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and you know what? I can see why the people who made that might believe that strongly.
Right. And they were super poor. So it did help their lives a great deal when corporate sponsorship showed up.
Interesting.
Yeah. It wasn't a wrong message. It was just the message. Which is so weird because and then I started looking at movies, trying to find like sort of the message of them.
Uh-huh.
And, musicals are key for that. Like Dirty Dancing and Footloose, which are, I don't know, are those musicals?
Because
they're more dance movies.
I think of Dirty Dancing as a dance movie.
Yeah. Cause there's singing musicals and then there's dancing musicals like Drumline.
That I haven't seen that.
Oh, it's about drumming.
Anyway, really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. I believe I don't want to guess the B plot on Drumline without seeing it again. Feel free to email me, Jackie@JackieCation.com. I think it's friendship. I'm uncertain.
Uh-huh. I just saw my favorite movie I've seen recently. It would be called a dance movie. I don't, or not. Is The Fitz? Did you see The Fitz?
No. F-I-T-Z? F-I-T-S?
F-I-T-S.
The Fitz.
Yeah.
No.
It's got music in it. It's got sort of dancing in it and boxing in it.
Oh,
Is
there singing?
It's not a musical, so it's not related to this. But it has some fantasy realism, or I don't know how you'd quite describe it, but it's just.
But it has musicality.
It has music. Yeah,
that's what I'm calling it.
Music
now.
Is important to it,
right? If it has dance, it's. Yeah. I mean, but when I was a kid, I think my favorite musical was so not a traditional music. Like I loved. You know what? I love The Music Man a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Oklahoma was great, except for the scary part. And then in Paris.
Oh, I just saw Oklahoma. Wait, the scary part, like the acid trip.
Judd is a murderer.
Right.
Yeah, and a rapist.
Yes.
And
yes.
You're like, I don't like the scary part of Oklahoma. I like when
we're like everything's
the cattlemen
burning and
the farmers can be friends. That's what I want.
Right.
Yeah. And all I remember is when that part of the movie come on, I would walk out of the room. King and I never saw the end of it because he dies at the end.
Mm.
Spoiler alert about 77 years ago. But I did love, but my favorite one was a movie that the music didn't have anything. It didn't move the plot. I don't know if it's traditionally a musical because I like The Music Man and I like Guys and Dolls. Those are two of my favorites.
Guys and Dolls.
Yeah?
I love it.
Okay.
Guys and Dolls, this is the thing. I saw Guys and Dolls 100% in Japanese at the Takarazuka Theater. When I visited Japan, there's this incredible.
The first time you saw it,
I had seen it. I had seen it before, so I or at least was vaguely aware. No, I'd seen it before. I saw it in D.C. I saw a show of it back when I was a kid, and I was living in D.C.
Okay.
And
so a live play.
A live play.
Okay.
So I knew about it. And then when I was in, I visited Japan, and I went to Takarazuka, which is a small town that is famous for this theater where every part is played by women.
Oh, okay.
And they train for years and years and years and years to be a part of this theater, and it's just a super precise the being there is like amazing. It's like being inside of a fantastic middle schooler's jewelry box. It's like the carpets, there's red carpet everywhere,
yeah.
Gold railings and mirrors, and when you go into the bathrooms there's a little just a dozen vanities in a row so you can like do your eyes,
yeah.
And tween girls will stand outside and wait for the actors to come in and out so they can just scream and scream and scream because everyone has their favorite.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a whole sort of culture around it. And there's also one in, it's not only, that's where the first one was. There's,
right.
Now it's also, I believe there's also one in Tokyo. And
do they get to perform forever in this thing? Or is it like a 10-year, like, ice skating gig? I mean,
you're part of the, there's like a company there.
Right.
And you go, it's like you train for it like a school. Like at a certain point, they'll decide if you're going to play men. And then that's all you live that just the whole time.
Wow.
And the sort of underclass, like the younger people, you know, have to like pay their dues and like.
And aspire to.
Yeah. Everyone has to look up to the, you know, and like clean the floors and like, you know, it's this real like boot camp. way
hierarchy.
Of life to be a part of this and
yeah.
It's super prestigious if you can manage to make it all the way to the point where you're playing like this lead. I mean, that's just
right,
you know, and that's really hard to do,
right?
And everyone is just, this production was amazing, and I was lucky that I sort of already knew what Guys and Dolls was about.
How do you call it?
Takarazuka.
Takarazuka. Okay, mm-hmm. Just in case.
Yeah, Takarazuka is famous for Takarazuka Theater, and also it's where Osamu Tezuka grew up, who created Astro Boy.
Oh, okay.
So a lot, there's also like a lot of, like some of this is sort of infused into anime.
And, right, right.
Just from the fact that he grew up near this theater.
Right, right. Fair enough. Wow. Okay. So you saw Guys and Dolls there entirely in Japanese.
Yes.
But you knew the story.
Yes.
What was that like?
It was amazing.
Yeah.
The production was so great. It was just so, everything was so on point. And then when they're done, everyone comes out and they do like a dozen encores with these massive sort of peacock tail feather boa things. Everybody comes back out. Everyone has like so many different costumes. And
so
they just flaunt how amazing it just was, what you saw.
They're just dressed as nicely, singing Rockin' the Boat.
Yes, in Japanese.
In Japanese.
Yes.
And are they dressed like Goombas of the 40s?
Yes.
I mean, the costumes are all American.
Pencil mustaches
and
suits.
And the Salvation Army and the,
yes,
the whole.
Yes, all of it. It's just like a beautiful production.
Beautiful recreation of the thing, but entirely Japanese.
Yeah.
With all women.
Yes.
Okay. Wow. That is amazing.
I'm trying to figure out if there's a way I can see it again.
Right. Did you ever see the movie with Marlon Brando?
Right. And what's it?
Sinatra.
Right?
Yeah, Sinatra plays.
No, I haven't. I've actually kind of like, ever since I saw that, I have been hesitant to, because I was like, man, I should watch the movie version because I'd seen the show when I was young and I'd seen that. But I just want that in my mind forever.
To be the last memory.
Yeah, yeah. It's just so
you
good.
Should schedule seeing it again and then see the movie so that it can still be the last thing you
yeah.
see. Guys and Dolls. Yeah, Guys and Dolls. I think the B plot of Guys and Dolls is all about second chances, you know, and that we all don't know everything. So that's the great thing about, because he's, Marlon Brando plays, I don't know, Shades Magoo. I don't know what his name is, but he's a shady dude and he's a gambler. And then the Salvation Army lady is super like, all buttoned up. So she's kind of like Grease in the fact that she loosens up by the end of it.
That's actually that part again, a little messed up that they like get this woman drunk.
The good news is that, gambler dude also there's movement on both sides. Yeah, like he straightens up,
but she doesn't
know
she's drinking alcohol.
Oh right,
that's the shady part.
The date rape part of it is a little weird. The calf roofie leche did.
She just doesn't know. Yeah,
she doesn't know what.
But you know
he Spanish.
Knows.
Yeah,
he should stop that.
He should stop that. Yeah, everybody. That. We're all. It's all super consensual now, you guys. We know that. Yeah. We all know that everybody, we all understand that consent is very complicated.
I'll do this. Okay. Let's do an ongoing podcast where I point out everything problematic in old musicals.
Right.
And we figure out how to continue to enjoy them while, while accepting that these are problems.
Right. It's all, and you try to watch. I saw the Godfather. And at the end of the first Godfather, I was like, well, this relationship isn't going to work out, so I never watched The Godfather 2, which is supposed to be even better than The Godfather.
I haven't seen
You haven't seen any of The Godfathers?
No.
In my opinion, you're not missing, it's not the end of the world.
But it's like,
my brothers? No, well, because my brothers all love The Godfather like the power of the sun, and people love The Godfather, but it's all of those. The Music Man is as much a sales guy kind of movie I can go. And The Godfather just feels like, oh, these are the dirtbags my dad knows, except for much more powerful. Because my dad was a bag man for a bookie in Milwaukee. And the Milwaukee, that's not the Corleones. That is not the Sopranos. That is.
I see. So the Huckstery Americana stuff.
Yeah.
It rings more true for you.
Right, right. It's just triggery. And I'm just like, dirtbags. That's Bob Stimmick. Get away from that guy. That guy's gonna take you for a buggy ride.
Whoa.
To quote the Music Man.
Gosh.
Thanks for the buggy ride. So I love the idea. So my favorite movie though, is called High Society, which is a musical version of the Philadelphia Story.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
The Philadelphia Story was Cary Grant, Katharine Hepburn, Jimmy Stewart, and a great character actors whose name I've never remembered. Very sad. And then that was turned into a musical. That was from 1938 or 39, right? In the 50s, Frank Sinatra, Bing Crosby, and Grace Kelly did a musical version of it where Bing Crosby and Frank Sinatra sang a lot. And Satchmo was in it. It was great. There were just musical numbers. Because those guys were in it. But I like musicals that move the plot forward, you know? Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not good if it doesn't.
Yeah. Then it's just music in the movie. Mm-hmm. Like Doris Day movies, usually she'll sing in them, but there's no reason for her to sing.
Have you seen, speaking of Jimmy Stewart, have you seen Ziegfeld Girl?
Oh. What year was that?
Oh my gosh.
I think I did see it, but so long ago.
I'm not sure exactly. It's got Hedy Lamarr.
Yeah.
Jimmy Stewart and,
Hedley.
No,
I'm kidding.
Is it?
No, it's Hedy Lamarr. Hedley is from Blazing Saddles. Anyway, so.
Right, that's right. Yes. I get jokes.
You do. You do get jokes. Rebecca Sugar from Steven Universe.
Oh, producers also one of my favorite.
Oh, the Producers.
Yeah, movie music.
Which
movie
has the musicals. Musical. It's meta, right?
Yeah.
It's a musical. I own the Mel Brooks. I got the box set for Christmas. And I have yet to watch all of them.
I mean, I'm obsessed with Zero Mostel in that. Well, Zero Mostel and Gene Wilder both in that are like, they're
in the
so.
Producers.
In the Producers are so good together. And Gene Wilder's so young.
Yeah.
And. They're
who did
great.
He play
also
in
that
the Producers?
Has, it does, there are things in that that really
was it Hitler.
It was the
Hitler musical, right? That was supposed to be a flop. That's
yes,
the Producers,
yes, yeah.
And then it ends up being a huge hit because it's hilarious and ridiculous.
Actually, I guess does that not because they made the musical. I haven't actually seen the new musical version they made
of the Producers.
I sort of consider the first one to kind of count, but I guess it doesn't have that much music in it.
Well, it's got the music within the it's a musical within the plot, which I don't think is because the musical is such
diegetic.
A big part of it, but I'm okay. I mean, if that's if I like High Society, you can like The Producers. Uh-huh, uh-huh. But The Producers is, who did Zero Mustache, did he play one of the producers?
He's Bialystock.
Okay.
Which
is a bagel. He's one of the... Isn't that a flat bagel? A Bialy?
Right, this,
Zero Mustache. And then, Mel Brooks, they play the actual producers, right?
Well, Mel Brooks isn't in it.
Actually, he produced.
Is he in it? He made it.
He made it, for sure.
It's Zero Mustache and Gene Wilder.
Oh, that's right.
They are the
producers.
Titular producers.
Yes. Zero Mustache always romancing some lady?
There's
ladies who need who need money.
Yes, that's how he's getting all the funding.
That's how he gets the funding. He gets it from old ladies.
Yes.
And then they accidentally create a hit, but they've sold more than 100% of the show.
Right. So now they're
in trouble.
Yeah.
Do they end up in jail doing a production?
Yes, they do, and then they do it. Yes, this is the whole movie.
Yes.
Anyone who hasn't seen it.
Small spoiler.
There you go.
Don't worry about it, because the minutia of The Producers is the lovely thing about The Producers, right?
And they're just their chemistry is so great.
Right, their chemistry,
because Zero's so smooth and such a conniving, horrible person, and then
Gene Wilder
is just this neurotic wreck who is just petrified of everything they're doing until he realizes it could actually work, and then he's so excitable about it. And
right,
they're amazing together. But that movie also has things in it that don't really
hold up.
No,
how can we ruin it and then enjoy it again? Tell us. What's wrong with it? Where's the Bechdel problem?
There's just a whole bunch of like man in a dress stuff.
Oh, man in a dress. And that never gets old. Man in a dress. Because it's a twist, you guys.
Yeah.
Nope. It's been covered. Keep writing. Unless you want to wear a dress, then it shouldn't be funny. Then it's just you looking pretty in a dress. Yeah, it'll be fine.
I feel like it's super
overdone.
Unfortunate. Phobic stuff.
Yeah, it is a little phobic just because, I mean, I remember you ever watch those old Johnny Carsons from the 70s and the Bob Hope specials from the 70s? There was a lot of guys in a dress. Well, I just watched all the Road movies, which are musical, mm-hmm. but again, not musicals. It's Bob Hope and Bing Crosby, and they are, culturally sensitive in Zanzibar, not. Mm-hmm. And then, they're always somewhere exotic with a movie playing behind them of Africa and them. I'm just doing Patty.
Wait, I don't want to do the podcast where we talk about these, focus on all the things that sadly don't hold up.
It actually does hold up. Uh-huh, but right. There's a couple of them that hold up anyway, uh-huh. where you're just like, because there's a point of that. I don't want them to take it out. You know, like in E.T.
Everyone should be, I think, super aware. I think it's, I've been on a research bent, just watching as many old musicals as possible, because there's so many that I missed.
Oh, right.
And it's very interesting, like because there's so many that I haven't seen where you just, you'll sort of watch it and you know that it's old, and then something will just, you'll just be like, wow, that was
okay.
Like, that is so.
Right. Holiday Inn.
Yes, no, and White Christmas also, like...
Oh, White Christmas is brutal.
It's
also shitty. You like White Christmas better?
I've seen White Christmas a billion times.
Yeah.
And I love a ton of the music in it.
Okay.
But yes.
We'll follow the old guy wherever he wants to go, whatever the thing.
A ton. But it's got some major, major... it's old.
It is old. But I don't know. I forget.
But I love Irving.
Well, Holiday Inn. Holiday Inn has I think it's Lincoln's birthday, or
yes.
is it the 4th of July?
Yeah.
It's Lincoln's birthday.
It's not okay. Yeah.
Yeah. They're in blackface.
Yeah.
And sometimes AMC will pull that out of the.
Oh, they'll take the scene out?
Yeah, they'll take the scene out. And I think that first of all, that woman who played Mamie. That was her, she got insurance because she got that work. So don't belittle, because her role was actually pretty good for the under five that she had, right? I mean, she had like five freaking lines, and she did a great job with it. But to pull it out is to actually just kind of retcon history to some extent.
Well, I mean, everybody's got to face what. So there are huge, uncomfortable realities that is the most minuscule fraction of.
Right.
That
compared to
being
slavery,
like, we're just not going to
pay the Japanese internment.
yeah, and everyone's, I think, should continue to be super aware. But it's been really interesting to watch. I mean, also just like seeing these old movies where they're so white. It doesn't. They're old.
Yes.
you know, it's not. I saw. There's a version of Carmen that is amazing.
I never saw Carmen
with an all-black cast.
Yeah.
That I was just watching.
Is it about Carmen Miranda? I don't know who that is.
No. You know what is it? Songs. You would know them. It's like da 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 da.
I might know the song.
Da 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 da. I don't know the lyrics off the top of my head.
Oh,
Carmen, the opera.
The opera Carmen. Yeah. Oh, I've only seen it in Bugs Bunny form, I'm afraid.
well, I've seen that.
Yes,
I've seen The Rabbit of Seville a billion times.
Right,
also,
right,
more than I've seen
anything.
This particular version of Carmen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, those, like, gosh. I mean, I feel like it also doesn't make sense. Now. I feel like that everyone, I don't know why we aren't making a billion musicals now to even begin to start to try to balance out the incredible inequity of
right.
what musicals have been.
Well, it's
but well, I feel it's right. And,
but you've been watching a lot of old musicals.
Yes.
Which ones did you like with or without caveats, right? I mean, which ones? Like what ones have you seen?
Say again.
Yeah, like
I'm spiraling.
Yeah, well, fair enough. I jumped way ahead because of what you just said to Hamilton. Yes.
I haven't actually seen Hamilton yet.
I haven't seen Hamilton. I've listened to the, and I've tried to.
And that's the thing. Yes, that's the thing. So I'm saying, like, why people are doing this, which is great. Yes,
it is happening, but it's
where is this thing? I haven't seen Hamilton.
Well, no, but the thing is what I saw was, so I'm a I could be a political history nerd, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when I heard about Hamilton, I listened to Hamilton before I knew that the entire cast was multiracial.
Mm-hmm.
That there was one white guy, and he plays the King of England, and I just listened to it and I was like, this is amazing. This is such a great. And then I started going online and trying to see if I could piece together through YouTube the entire play. And I bought a ticket for the LA version of it a year and a half ago, and I will see it in November. Anyway, but the.
You got a ticket to the LA version?
Yeah. I bought season tickets to the whole season of Pantages.
It was sold out like that. I was, yeah.
We could talk after, but I have access to two more tickets.
Can I be your date?
Well, no, I'd have a date, and then but I get to buy four tickets on Tuesday.
Oh.
And I've already sold.
Can I please go with you?
You can have the other two tickets if you want.
I do.
There you go. Success.
Oh my gosh.
We will make this happen.
I thought I completely.
You might have missed it.
Because it
sold out.
Sold out instantly. Yeah.
I just have to make sure I get them on Tuesday. I assume Monday night at midnight. Is when I should start checking into the Pantages website.
Wow.
To get the extra four tickets that I'm allowed. I'm allowed four more tickets, but I have to pay for them. But
I'll pay you back.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
no, just give them to me.
No, just give them to you. And so,
I did your podcast.
Exactly. In trade, you get a t-shirt and two tickets to. Wait a minute. So,
I'll pay you back.
Yeah, no. Yeah, of course. And, but the. So I went and I started watching this and I was like, it was one of the things that, you know, it's embarrassing to be revealed of your racism and to find a new layer of your racism as you go along in life. You're like, oh, shit. And it's a terrible. But to watch the Founding Fathers portrayed by Black people and Puerto Ricans and Asians and all these people, right? You just go, all right, humanity. And anybody can play anybody. Like you're like all the women playing men's parts in Japan.
Yeah. Well, I mean, since I do animation.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's always been ridiculous in animation because it's voice acting.
So anyone can play anyone.
Yeah, and it's, but it's not how it's been.
Right. Men play men?
Well, women play women? Just like a, just across.
Oh, just race.
Yeah.
Gender, all of it?
Like, I mean, well, they could, they do sometimes.
Right.
I've been, like with my show, most of my cast, is not white. But it's.
What's nice to give people work who are clearly qualified, and you just hire the, no, that doesn't, is that not the right?
No, I'm just.
The right. Well, the thing is middle-aged white lady over here. I'm just like, I'm not, it's not quantitative, or it's not, what's the.
This is something I.
We don't have to discuss it.
But, oh, no, I just, okay. I'm very, very, very righteous about
it. Oh, really? You're like, no, we're doing this.
So. I'm not, yeah, there's,
yeah.
I speak to this a lot, but, yeah, I mean, I think with everything, it's just like, it's an issue with how everything going on behind the scenes, where people's priorities are.
Yeah.
And who's making things and the voice that those things should have. And then the voices that should be in those things. I mean, everything needs to shift.
Yeah.
And in the cases where it is, I think everyone needs to be very, very vocal about how great that is.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's, it's so hard. It's, yeah, the realization of how hard it is to get work. You know, I have some sense of that as a woman, right? I mean, all of my life just trying to do stand up, but, it's just such a different, you know, that whole idea of being overqualified. Mm-hmm. And not still not being getting the job, mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Right.
At the highest level, I think it's been established. But yeah, evening out that playing field, because everybody just tends to book the people that they know, right? And so white guys tend to know other white guys. And it's,
and I think also, I mean, if you're trying to change
that
things change how things are done because things have been done in a way that is totally not equal,
mm-hmm.
Or fair. You know, people will return to things that have worked in the past,
mm-hmm.
and you can't return to things that worked in the past if you're trying to change
mm-hmm.
what yeah. people change what works. And you also cannot prove that something works if you don't do it.
Right.
So you have to do it. And then have people
prove that it works.
Yeah, have people like before you can say, because I think, and in the way that my show has been, there are a lot of things that statistically are not supposed to work.
Yeah,
that have worked just fine, and now I can say, you know, look, people are more than willing to watch this.
Yeah,
this show with these characters and this cast and this team.
Yeah,
making it
right
and saying what we want to say.
Yeah.
So
that, which is, of course, I think to some extent the purpose of all of what anybody does. I mean, if you can for comedy for me, it's just like, just turn your head.
Uh-huh.
And that's the joke, right? Is uh-huh. like, cause we're all staring in one direction. If you can turn your head, there's something funny there. And it's how uncomfortable you are or how uncomfortable I am or how we didn't notice how that was the thing. And that's uh-huh. that's kind of my favorite thing about stand-up is when someone shows me a different perspective. And if they show me a different perspective about something mundane, I'm like, oh, I see the joke there. But if they show me something, a different perspective on something profound, it's huge. It's like mm-hmm. Maria Bamford's act, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're just like, holy shit. Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. And you're like, first of all, it's hilarious because it should be because it's comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And then it changes to some extent lives, and it really can. Mm-hmm. Like it's inclusive. Like Steven Universe, I've seen so many people come up to you this week and just go, it just involved me. You know, it's me. You're letting me be seen or me be acknowledged, or I don't feel like such a weirdo, or I don't feel like something's wrong. Right.
Uh-huh.
And that, you know, get a little verklempt. I'm not going to lie to you. I get a little choked up because it's nice. It's good. Right.
Because mm-hmm.
that's what we all should do to some extent. And even if you're a fucking plumber, you know, make it, make it an inclusive plumbing company. You know, that's, how is that going to be wrong? You know?
Right. I think too, I mean, when it comes, maybe this is sort of a musical thing too.
Good. I'm sorry, while I take you on a buggy ride.
Oh my gosh.
From musicals.
Well, I mean, there's so much feeling in musicals. Everyone, you know, there's like a Fosse thing that really stuck with me, that Bob Fosse said about how, like, if you can't, if it's not enough, I'm going to get the specifics of the quote wrong, but if something isn't enough to just say, you know, you sing, and if that's not enough, then you dance. Like, that's how, you know, that should be the thrust behind, this is no longer the quote, but that should be the thrust right. behind why you're doing a sequence, is because something is just too powerful and specific to be expressed just by talking.
Oh, okay.
And I think,
well, that's neat.
That's why I think that musicals, like, there are so many, especially so many of us making Steven back at the studio, like, who have had, we've been in these sort of gray areas of seeing things that are sort of like how we feel, but not really how we feel.
Yep.
And what you end up seeing on screen a lot, and I see in like all of these old musicals, which I love very much, you know, you're watching somebody just express their feelings, and then you're watching other characters care about those feelings. And so I think that the thing that needs to be filled in for so many people with these very specific feelings about who they are, that it's not just that you don't see people express those feelings as those people that you feel like you are.
Yeah.
You also never see anybody hear that.
Yeah.
And change their behavior or decide to, I mean, you know, these are stories where characters have arcs,
yeah.
You know, these are songs where people are letting something out and somebody hears it and then they change how they think, or you speak to someone via song, via dance, so passionately that it makes them realize that they should care how you feel.
Right.
And if you never see somebody express in a beautiful way their feelings and then see that be received, where it's like, oh yeah, who you are as a person and the way that you feel matters to me as this other character.
Yeah.
It will change the way you feel in your life.
Right. It will, people take that back.
Yeah. And you're seeing people, express love and receive love in these stories. And you're like, that's what it looks like. That's what love between two people can look like. Isn't that lovely? Isn't that a lovely dream?
And it could look like anything.
It could look like anything. And what's really exciting, I think, especially right now, is like, because there's so many things that can be done in that way.
Oh, hey, come on in. Hi, Andy.
You know, there's so many stories that haven't been told.
Right.
So many people that haven't expressed how they feel about being who they are through song and dance.
Yep.
That could, that should, that must, not just because it would feel good to be that person and see that, but because that's a story you haven't already seen.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah. It would just be more interesting.
Right.
It would just be more exciting.
It's a more fun story because...
Yeah, to get to talk about.
Right. I don't want to watch A Dog's Promise. Anyway, it's fucking A Dog's Promise.
Was that from the...
It's the one where it's so humanistic. Somebody told me the plot of A Dog's Promise, and I found rage. Because it's essentially...
Is it a musical? Because then maybe I would...
No. It is not a musical.
It's dog barking.
Yeah,
it's music. Like,
right. Essentially, your dog doesn't love you because your dog is on a journey to find its original owner because it's a reincarnated dog, and you're like, no, that you and your dog are you and your dog, and that is just a fucking dog, and it's a perfectly good dog. So, literally, this dog is on a dog's journey. It is a dog with the original owner, and then it dies, and then it becomes a new dog with a new owner, and he keeps trying to get back to his original owner. That's the whole movie.
Is it like Polly the Parrot movie? Was that called Polly?
Yeah,
there's like that.
Is that same thing happening with some
freaking
bird?
Like is friends with the little Pepsi girl, and then
I don't know.
They lose track of each other. Then.
I don't mind when animals are our friends, and I want them to be. I want them to even be unlikely friends. When a turtle and a cat are friends, that's adorable to me on the internet. But they also just get to be animals. I'm not going to go swim with the dolphins.
How do we get here?
I don't know how we get here. This is a classic. It's a beautiful moment because you were talking about something real, and I turned it into weird dog's promise. Aren't you glad that you came on the Dork Forest, Rebecca Sugar?
I feel very exposed.
Yeah, well, I'm a fucking open nerve. Let me talk about, what are your favorite musicals? Can you name a couple that we didn't talk about?
We didn't talk about? I loved, I saw All That Jazz.
Oh, wow.
Which really struck me. I saw it, I think, right when I moved out to L.A.
The movie from the 70s?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when I saw it at that point, and this was like where I was starting working in animation, I just got out of college and I was burning the candle at all ends. And it was just so romantic to me. You know, this guy is just losing his mind for his art. And
yeah.
The scene where he's in the hospital and even his hallucinations are taking the form of his sort of show.
Yeah.
And this mix of like, I felt like I related to it a lot because I, as an animator who's making sort of wacky cartoons, and that's what I want to be doing. Like, yep. I want to be making,
you're pro-wacky.
I like Fleischer cartoons. I like Looney Tunes. Like, I like old, old dorky stuff, and I want to make it, but I also want to make it really good and honest and powerful. And so, like, looking at this, where it's sort of like, oh, it's Bob Fosse's trying to, like, reconcile the fact that his medium is this sort of corny medium, but he wants it to be transcendent.
Yeah, yeah.
And striving for that is driving him, like, actually insane. And
I want to watch all movies with you because you have such a great vision of what they're really about.
Well, this is what was weird. This is how I felt when I saw it the first time. I was just like, oh man, yes, like, kill yourself for your art. Like, I was just really, really believed in it, and like, I loved that he's dying and he's. Even that, those feelings have to manifest in the form of, this thing that he's still thinking about and trying to plan, even as he's dying.
As he's dying,
until he's like already dead. and then I saw it recently. I think within the last year, I watched it again. I was so excited to show some of my friends because I loved it so much. But this is several years into being a showrunner.
Right.
Watching it now.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my god, like. Please take care of yourself. Your team needs you. You like that? Don't do this to them. Like I know that you are like want to like do drugs and be a mess and that everything is overwhelming and you're being seduced by death. But like, please like drink water and go to work.
Yeah.
And don't take on two projects at once.
Yeah.
Because that's essentially it's what it is. And I didn't really understand this before. It's about taking on too many projects at once and then having that be a detriment to your health.
Right. Well, see,
and
when
it's like,
well,
that's your fault. You shouldn't have done that.
See, when I saw All That Jazz, all I could think was like, why is this guy such a mess? Uh-huh. I was like, slow down, buddy.
Yeah.
It's literally, I am a bit of a simple woman of the people sometimes. I literally remember just thinking, slow down.
Uh-huh.
It's, you'll get to do it all. It'll still be there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's crazy. but it is beautifully done, though. It is an amazing artistic vision of that insanity.
And the dancing is incredible.
Yes.
And it's just so intense. The I think the actress that is, or the actor that's his mistress in the movie, I think actually is his lover.
Yeah.
Like, so there's all this.
Oh, so real.
Gosh, I read about this a bit ago. There's so much weight in it that is fascinating. And also, I think I told my dad that I was watching it, and he thought it was silly because it's like it's so sort of 70s.
Yeah,
in these ways that I think they're really interesting in the ways that they're dated.
Yeah. Well, they're kind of fascinating to look at a time capsule.
Yeah. And Cabaret is like that too, where it's just like, oh, like don't like,
yeah.
It's like, it's so romantic that you're just going to die for this art. but it's like,
but don't bother.
Please. Yeah.
Yeah.
Please be okay.
Yeah. I have a knee jerk reaction to people who talk about the genius of Lenny Bruce and Mitch Hedberg and all these great comics who also lit their lives on fire because they could not get help. And I'm like,
right, remember
it's
when
sad.
Mitch Hedberg died and I was just like, oh my God.
Yeah, that's sad. Like,
that's like a cartoonist comic artist thing too. People just totally.
Right. It's like, it's his art, man. He couldn't. And you're like, no, No, it's sad. It's not good. It isn't cool. It isn't, you know, suicide and depression and overindulgence are stopping creativity, in my opinion. They don't enhance it.
I think it feels like that stuff. I remember sort of feeling like being self-destructively intense about your work made it,
yes,
if not better, interesting in a way that I valued.
Right.
You know, where it's like, oh, this, you know, I need to push myself to do something that is better than my best.
Yes.
In order to, and that will make it an interesting thing. And I look at stuff I did when I felt that way, and it's like overworked in a way that I find like not particularly interesting. Well, it's not that it's interesting, but not necessarily good.
Right. Right. It's a 17-year-old attitude that isn't entirely bad or wrong, mm-hmm, but it is young. It is an adolescent kind of hero worship of destruction, mm-hmm, because you think it'll make you more interesting, and it does, mm-hmm, but only if you don't destroy yourself.
Yeah, yeah. The thing that makes you productive is keeping regular hours,
yeah,
making lists of what you need to do.
Drink an extra glass of water.
Drinking water. Yeah, and I still I struggle with this stuff now, but I mean, the difference is that I don't feel proud when I'm doing a bad job taking care of myself.
Yes.
Which is really, like, what a useless attitude that will help nothing and definitely never made me more productive. It just made me have back problems.
And how wonderful is it that you can not beat yourself up for not taking care.
Yeah.
You know, like it's also 19 it's like, knots, but you know what I mean.
In removing that, you also remove the stress that comes from you feeling like I should be doing that, which,
yes,
is also very taxing.
Right.
So just free yourself.
The Dork Forest is entirely about just embracing the fact that you're a dork. And if being a dork means that I go to bed at 10 o'clock on a cruise ship when people are up till 2, so be it. You know, I mean, last night I stayed up till 1. Playing board games, you guys. That makes me super cool. I know that. I know that makes me a bit of a rebel. Makes me kind of edgy. And I would encourage. Because all that jazz cabaret, mm-hmm, they celebrate that sort of self-destructive artist.
Yeah,
that it is fascinating to watch. But it's fascinating to watch because it's a teledrama, you know? It's a show.
And it's real. I think, you know, people do that, and
right,
and when you see it, it's very, very interesting. But if you, you know, if
you're
what
married
you are watching
to it
is a tragedy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you loved that person,
if you're that's your dad.
You would be like, Liza, please stop.
Don't.
Like, you know, it's okay, or like, yeah, I don't.
It might,
you know,
be the fascination with reality TV.
So yeah,
know.
Yeah. If you love that person, you'd feel that way. So if you love yourself, which if you don't is a very great project to start striving to do.
Yes.
Then you wouldn't want yourself to be the star of a tragedy where you die.
Yes. But you'll show them if you die tragically, and you're like, who's seeing that? Nobody. Yeah. So,
but I think it's also like there's a strange kind of pride in disliking yourself.
Yeah.
That I wonder, I'm sort of think about like, oh, and I still, that's the thing I try to sidestep.
Yeah.
Too. And I think you need to, especially if you don't, maybe this is why, like if you don't have that, if you do dislike yourself, then what are you going to do? Feel like double bad? You might as well feel good about the fact that you dislike yourself by being
right,
kind of proud of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you will stay in that. So I think the difficult thing is to like let yourself, step away from feeling good about feeling bad.
Yeah.
Take a step backwards and feel bad about feeling bad, and then strive to be a person that feels good about feeling good, which is so hard.
It is hard. And yes, Bamford reads all these self-help books. And one thing that she said probably 12, 15 years ago that I don't know what book she got it out of. I don't know, but it resonated so hardcore that it changed my life is when she said, I was beating myself up about something, and she said that she had read just sort of a question. It was, she loves a workbook, and so it was a workbook question. It was like, what are you getting out of it? Mm-hmm. Feeling bad about yourself. What do you get? What do you do? Or do you just get to wallow, mm-hmm, and that's fun for you? Do you think that you're going to get sympathy from outside? Is that what you're getting?
I think I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm going to interrupt. I feel like the thing you feel in that moment is that what you get out of it is an acceptance of the truth. Because like it's like, oh, I'm not avoiding this truth that I feel bad about myself.
Right.
By embracing this as a truth,
yeah,
I'm not sort of living in the dark. Like I have this understanding of myself, and it feels good to feel like you have a full understanding of yourself, except that the thing is that you can change that. Whereas you can't, there's a lot of things you can't change, but you can't change
right.
your feelings about yourself. It's just very difficult to do.
Right. It's practice. It's a daily, you know, there was another book. Who gave me this? I don't know. I have the boatload of friends who have self-help books. And one of the books has this. What?
Friends.
I get friends. I'm in too.
I have some too.
I have a handful. Louise Hay, You Can Heal Your Life. She healed her own, she healed her own cancer, you guys. I will make fun of that. But I will also read that book. So, the thing, what she did is she had this, it was a self-help thing where, say to yourself 400 times a day, uh-huh. I love and approve of myself, to yourself, uh-huh. like inside your head. And you're like, 400 times a day? What? Uh-huh. And she said, do it for a month, 30 days uh-huh. of I love and approve of myself 400 times in your head. Uh-huh. And she said, what it mostly does is it makes you aware of how many times you're in your head going, oh, I'm an idiot, or I'm fat and horrible, mm-hmm. or I'm a jackass. You know, what? One of those, right?
Yeah.
And she's like, every time you have one of those negative thoughts, rattle off 10 of them. I love and approve of myself.
You start to be aware of how often you do that.
Yes.
Yeah. I had one of those not that long ago where I was like, it clicked where I started to hear myself talking to other people. And I was like, every time someone says something nice to me, I turn it around to be about how I'm terrible. And I'm like, why am I doing this?
Don't do it.
It doesn't make them happy
at all.
They're like, I've started to like see these looks. Why are you?
That isn't even conversation. Yeah. I don't know how to fix that.
I'm like, who is this? Who is this for?
Right. Who is this for? What is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so musicals, I think, can fix all of that kind of weird solo kind of, let's bring it back to musicals, uh-huh. can fix sort of that loner outsider kind of feelings, I think. Because uh-huh. musicals tend to be more about outsiders and loners.
Yeah, I think, well, some of them. I think,
there's not a lot of jock ones. I suppose High School Musical.
That one I haven't seen, actually.
I saw all three. Turns out they don't kiss until the third one. I disapprove.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. I guess I'm trying to, I guess it's sort of on a case by case. I mean, so many of them are about love.
Mm-hmm.
Oh gosh. Yeah, I guess it's pretty case by case. I mean, I think for me, I was sort of talking about it a little earlier, but expressing your feelings in such an extreme way and then having them be heard.
Yeah.
That's really, you know, what it is. Like I did, so I did a musical episode of my show, which is called Mr. Greg. And I got to write a torch song for it, which was one of my favorite things I've ever gotten to write for the show.
Oh my God.
And it's the character of Pearl is expressing, she's lost, so the love of her life, Rose, who, is gone. There was Steven's father had, this is like a big part of the show.
Yeah, yeah.
Rose and Greg, Steven's father, sort of, they were together, and Pearl was very resentful of this. And now that Rose is out of the picture, if you watch the show, you'll see that she sort of, she disappears when Steven comes into existence, and now there's only Steven. So Pearl is sort of left to take care of the son of the love of her life, and this guy who she really doesn't like.
Yeah.
And she sings this torch song about how she's really, really trying to accept that Rose chose Greg and is now gone, and it's just so hard for her to accept that. And then it's sort of overheard. It's overheard by both Steven and Greg. And for me, I just really, really, really want to do this sequence. Not because there are all these love songs in musicals and love stories in musicals where someone expresses their love feelings and then they get what they want in the end. And the happy ending is that the people who should be together are together, mm-hmm. which, but I think, to me, the thing that's really exciting about musicals is just that a character's feelings matter. And so this is, it's not so much that she's, ever going to get what she actually wants.
Right.
But the thing that she feels like she should just sort of absorb this, and she doesn't have to. Like, everyone, once they understand how hard she's trying and what she felt, people are interested in how she feels. And that's the thing I never saw in a musical.
Yeah.
I just never saw a character that I related to in that way express their feelings and then have someone be like, I care about your feelings. A very, very, very simple thing.
Yeah.
And I wanted to do a story.
Yeah.
Where somebody cared and where it could be openly discussed. And love is discussed in tons and tons and tons and tons of musicals.
Yeah. But it usually does end up where then they, she sings the torch, whoever sings the torch song or the love song, mm-hmm. and then they get the person they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're saying is she sings this song about love and jealousy and rage, kind of, right? Mm-hmm. I assume.
Yeah. I just have a really humble request, which is just, let's have people care about her feelings.
Yeah.
That's all I want.
That's it. She doesn't have to get Greg. She doesn't have to
And
right. She doesn't get Greg. But and she doesn't even want Greg. She wanted Rose, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So but she could still be happy again. It doesn't matter. But her feelings in that moment are very real.
Yeah,
and everybody gets to hear them.
Her feelings matter and she matters.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is something that even a lot of these love stories in musicals I wish they would do also, where it's like, you know, this character doesn't need to be validated by another person. What matters is that this person is capable of achieving happiness within themselves.
Yeah.
But part of that, I think, needs to be that you have some sense that you as a person matter.
Yeah.
That's what I want. That's what I want out of musicals.
All right. This has been an amazing episode, Rebecca Sugar. You realize that we are at an hour 14.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. So we could continue to talk for another 3 hours, but I'm going to let you go, because unless you want to keep talking. Do you have more musical talk that you wish to tell me about? Or
I think...
you think you're good?
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, no, it's all good. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. You should be. Ladies and gentlemen, you've listened to Rebecca Sugar talk about musicals on The Dork Forest. Thank you so much for doing the program. Steven Universe is the television show. There's going to be an art book. There's an RPG called Save the Light coming. And it's at Rebecca Sugar on Twitter. And she's right. She's right about musicals. I don't know. I usually don't judge. But I have this to say. Thank you so much for listening to the show. And you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?